everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Chris.
What's up? So, this week, we're going to be talking about news and some spoilers, like always. And we're going to get into inbred metas, how they happen, why they're bad, maybe, things you can do to prevent it, that kind of stuff. So, first up, what's everybody been up to? What do you got, Jerry?
All right, so I played a PPTQ top-8ed once again. Could not finish. It happens. I caught Storm, of all things. And Storm just beats me, and I was playing Grixis Zombies.
Well, you're also referring to Standard, correct?
Standard, I apologize. Standard PPTQ. Just ran into...
So the paradoxical outcome, Aetherflux Reservoir Storm?
Yep. Just ran into that all... Like, for that top-8, it upset me, just running into it like that. Let's see. I taught Rob how to play Cube on stream, for those who saw it. It was a ton of fun. I didn't know it was Rob's first time on Cube. So getting to teach him, plus it's the best one. It was Vintage Cube Online. Let's see. What else did I do?
Vintage or Holiday?
Vintage. It is Vintage Cube. Power Cube.
Oh, yeah. That's what Holiday Cube is, right? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. We're on the same page.
I just always think of it as Holiday Cube because it comes out around Christmas.
I will be playing in an IQ this Saturday. It's a Legacy IQ. And I'll be playing Eldrazi. Let's see. In Modern League, I managed to play against Gabby Spartz, who's playing Dredge, and I was playing Ad Nauseam. She dredged 36 on turn 1, did not hit an Archimedes, so got 0 triggers, and I managed to beat her.
I mean, that's just Modo being Modo.
Oh, no. I was so happy about that. I'm like, she flipped 36 cards and never hit a single copy. I was like, we are rolling in the dough right now. Could not have been any better. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I did for week one. Or this week.
Gotcha. What have you been up to, Chris?
Well, I've been kind of busy here lately. You know, the holiday season coming up, so you try and get things wrapped up. But I've actually had 2 or 3 people approach me, and they were like, I didn't know you played Magic. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, I've been looking to get back into it. I haven't played in a long time. So I've been trying to introduce those people back into Magic and get some more players into the environment, you know, whether new players or former players, and try and bring them in and show them what's going on right now and how things have changed in the Magic scene. So, you know, just trying to bait some hooks to get some more people into some competitive Magic.
Nice. Well, I was going to come up your way, Jerry, and play that Legacy IQ with you, but we got freezing rain today, and it's supposed to be worse tomorrow, so I don't want to drive.
No, I wouldn't ask you to do that.
Yeah, that's basically this week for me, was just kind of prepping. It's been a while since I played Legacy, and I'm playing a new deck, so I was just trying to get some reps in, gold fishing and things like that, trying to get a feel for it, get ready for that. But weather happens, it's Illinois and Indiana, you know. And it's winter. We're going to get freezing rain and snow and can't travel sometimes.
Yeah, that lake effect life, man. I'm sick of it. Done with lake effect snow. It can go away now.
And then just a reminder for people here, we got 1 week left and chance to win all 5 Commander 2016 decks. Go listen to our Commander special, and Rob has all the information about the contest in that.
Yep, definitely.
So... let's get into some news. I feel like it's almost every week now, but there's just more cheating stuff going on. This one was old Shuhei. It was casting an Avacyn in GP Denver. He counted the mana twice. I think he had, 7 and needed 8 because he cast 2 things. So he just paid 4 for his Avacyn.
Yeah, the turn was he had 3 mana up. He casted a Stasis Snare. It got countered, and then he attempted to cast an Avacyn. And funny enough, neither player caught it, and the Avacyn also got countered. Had that Avacyn not been countered, that would have been game-breaking.
Right. I mean, that's Avacyn. nothing new there. Avacyn wins games. That's why you play it.
No surprises there. None at all. But it's just, it's a no, like, at this point, I don't even know who in the Hall of Fame is, like, earned it or not, because it's a Hall of Fame player that did it.
Yeah.
Shuhei Nakamura.
Right.
Yeah, I mean.
Also, like, wasn't he, like, visibly counting lands,
yeah,
like,
yeah, he visibly counted seven lands on the table, and the first, like, he had to cast a Stasis Snare for something. He realized his mistake. He counted like again and went ahead and did it anyways. He called it a lapse in his judgment.
Yeah, I mean, that's
we gotta put some on the judges too on this, because every time we see something like this, you never see the judge, you know, stopping what's going on, and it's like. I get it. It's the player's responsibility to maintain board state and all this, but it's also the judge's responsibility to make sure people aren't cheating and they are playing by the rules. And I feel like that's getting overlooked a little bit.
Oh, Chris, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. The judges are, I mean, it was in a feature match area. In that area, there's like three judges swooping like a hawk around them three tables. Like, yeah. They make sure there ain't no cheating going on.
And then isn't Avacyn also the one that if you, what was the card at an open not too long ago? Someone sacrificed an angel, and the card specifically says, you know, if a non-angel card dies, flip it. Is that's Avacyn? You know, and that happened, and it's like the judge was involved on that. Like, how is this getting passed? Like these people are there to make sure everything's followed, and you know, reading the cards and. Keeping everything correct.
No, you're right. That is Avacyn. Avacyn specifically says non-angel cards.
And so, you know, as much as I agree, like, a lapse in judgment or whatever happened there, I fully agree that for the degree that it's happening, especially at that level, someone needs to go back and look at the judge and go, hey, bro, you got to sit down with us, and we got to figure out what happened here, because you missed this plain as day.
Yeah, it's pretty bad when people on camera can catch
it. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, where, like, sorry, Jerry, I was talking over there I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Like, I think judges should be able to go back and look at replays, like NFL style. Like,
Go ahead. Oh, well, I thought they instituted that now, that they were... you could go back and look at coverage cameras to get correct board states and things of that nature.
No, what they're doing is they'll look at coverage cameras well after the fact and punish players accordingly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not really. No, it's not.
Yeah, no. Like, I want it as if I'm sitting across from him and he casts the Avacyn, say I don't have the counter spell, and I look over, I'm like, oh, you have seven lands. Hey, judge, can we roll the tape here? Look back. You know, I think his foot was across the line here.
Yeah, put him on a 30-second delay. You know, that's a private stream for them to look at stuff if they need to.
Yeah, no, I agree. Something like that would be really nice.
You know, that would hold people accountable. Because then he could be like, no, not only did you not pay the correct mana cost, you intentionally did not pay the mana cost, and isn't that like just an instant game loss?
Yeah, that's a GRV, game rules violation. That'll get you a game loss. In certain situations, it might get you a DQ. Like, it depends on how egregious the offense is.
Yeah, I think if we start, you know, putting a little bit of a hammer down, we can kind of avoid some of these. Like, hey, remember that guy? You know, he got a good hammer last week for trying to sneak it by. So, I'll just take my loss with pride and try and get him in the next game.
I remember that guy.
I members. So Jerry put this in here about lots of general consistency in articles. People hate standard, which sure, that's true. But like, now I think back about it, I don't remember the last time people were writing that they liked standard.
It's coming across as worse, though. Like, I've read like five articles this week about how stale, how bad standard is. There was also a tweet sent out by someone from Wizards who asked about, like, if you could rate standard on a 1 through 10, 10 being the best, what would you rate it? And the solid average was 3. People were not pleased with Standard at all. And it just seems to come across more right now. So, you know, I mean, it's not a surprise. No one's ever really liked Standard to begin with since RTR Theros, if I were to argue that point. But, no, it's pretty apparent people are not pleased with it. And I think half the problem is we're stuck on these same decks over and over again. And Marvel is just an impressive strategy that kind of forces people into the other two strategies.
Or an aggro option that, you know, vehicles and things like that.
Yeah, an aggro option would be grand.
I understand for the most part it's a rock, paper, scissors format with some outliers, but, I mean, that's not the worst format I've heard. You know what I mean?
But it's I kind of got where their arguments were coming from, whereas, yeah, they're three different decks, but they're three decks that are doing the same thing. It's three mid-range decks where one of them has a combo out, and one of them can just aggro your face off immediately, and one tries to go deeper than all of them. I mean, you know, like you said...
I mean, that's Wizard's fault. Like, that was them pushing abilities on creatures.
Yes. I mean, like you said, an aggro format, like a Lightning Bolt or a Skullcrack would be wonderful in this format.
Yeah.
Chris, you have any opinions on this?
Yeah, so someone posted, and I kind of agree with Alex. It's them putting abilities, or like there was an article from Wizards saying they were trying to get away from the traditional, you know, a 1 mana 3 damage or something like a an Elvish Mystic to into a ramp type thing. And I don't know, maybe Magic seemed more fun than like, hey, I'm going to go up against, you know, red green ramp here, but I have the chance of just burning their face off. But odds are in the control matchup, he's just going to beat me, you know, because he's going to counter everything. And I think they kind of need to move away from the value creature that we're seeing and move towards a, hey, we need some traditional spells here, you know, to get some of the traditional decks we're thinking of, not traditional creature decks that do what these other, you know, your aggro, your mid-range, and your control. So instead of making creatures fit that, let's get some more spells that just naturally fit in those decks, you know, some sorcery, some instances that do that job, is kind of my opinion. Like, we've gone so far away from that, you know, we're just like, hey, if you want to do that, you have to cast this creature, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I can agree with that.
One of the problems I actually have with Standard right now is Standard, to me, has always felt like a format that wants to curve. Like, you kind of just want to be doing the most powerful things that, you know, every man, you want to play a 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, as much as possible, as opposed to other formats that don't necessarily play that way. But there's just not a lot of 1-drops in Standard right now. No. Like, in Standard's past, like, there's been, like, Duress and Thoughtseize and things to do on one. Right now, it's like, I don't know.
Beaumont Courier, Traversal.
Vessel Vacancy? Like, ugh.
Even when you know, look there, at there's some no of Elvis the Mystics,
there's no Bolts.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even in the last set, at least we had Warden at one, which, at one, he wasn't that great, but once you started, you know, pumping him up, he became a great creature.
Yeah.
But we've even kind of moved away from that. Like, you know, what are we going to play at one that's all right?
Like, the number one played 1-drop is Thraben Inspector, and that's like a 1/2 that maybe draws a card at some point in the game. Like, that's so bad.
Dude, best Squire ever. I'm not mad.
Yeah, but like, The deck he's played in doesn't even want a Squire. They just want to randomly draw a card.
They just want that token, I know, and the ability to crew the copter, which is probably the other problem with the format.
Right.
Chris, you mentioned Warden of the First Tree. How about that Frontier format?
So, I've been looking into it, and I like the idea, but I personally hate Siege Rhino.
Someone don't like me today.
So if I had to play against it again, I would probably rather go play with a pack of angry porcupines. But the idea of a new format coming out that maybe these cards that you spent a little bit of money on to be in the latest and greatest are now relevant, they're still relevant. Now you get to play with the best cards of a couple sets that don't necessarily have just the best cards all the way back to... Because what is it? It's not all the way back to 10th. It's something short. So like
15.
The
new side border change.
The little dingy mark at the bottom that shows rarity.
So we don't get Bolt, do we?
Nope.
No.
Do we get Path to Exile?
Nope.
No, that's nothing. Like, it's literally... Cons and M15 are the only things that are extra in it.
Yep. Like, outside of that, it's everything else that's standard legal.
So I see the pros and I see, no pun intended, the cons to it. and I really didn't mean to do that until I was already like 3/4 through my statement. So I think it might be too much of just playing the very best. Like, you know, when 4-color was around, no one liked Jeskai Black because it was like $900 to play it. And that was all people played. And if you didn't, you really couldn't win too much with anything else. People didn't like the link that we played with Siege Rhinos, so why would we bring those back? People didn't like playing against Rally because when they found out Rally could slowly, you know, grind down Jeskai Black, everyone switched to Rally, and then it was nothing but Rally mirrors. And it's still
nothing but Rally in Frontier.
Yep, that's all it is right now. It's actually, it brings me, you know, brings me to my opinion on Frontier is Rally is dominating. This format's fleshed out. It's had like 2 months to really punch out some tournaments, and Rally holds 11% of the format. Splinter Twin held 11% at its highest amount, and it got banned. And no other deck is even competing. At least Splinter Twin had Summer Bloom and Jund closing in at 7-9%. Nah, everything else is like 4% or lower. It's ridiculous. Like, it's just Rally, 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 Rally.
I mean, I guess you could call me like a cynic, but I've never looked at like Frontier decks or anything because I just don't care. Because in my opinion, Frontier was not made by Wizards. It was made by a company who sells cards for money. Like, that's their source of profit, is to sell cards and, you know, sleeves and stuff. But they want to hold value. They bought all these bulk from people after something rotated, and, you know, they're like, oh, we have all these rallies that, because everyone had a play set, and they're like $1. I wonder if we could get these up to like $1.50. How would we do that? Oh, we can make a format where everybody plays Rally again. Like, in my opinion, the format was created to make money, and I'm not a fan of that.
Amen, so what brother. You're telling me, what I hear you saying, is that they are the hallmark of the Magic community.
Sure.
Like, the technology age, and somehow this company is still out there selling cards.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, like, I can see it. I'm sure this sounds great. Your cards get to last a little bit longer, but people didn't like playing Rally. So why would you want to play in a format where you essentially are playing Rally again? Like, that doesn't sound fun.
If your name's Emma Handy, you loved that deck.
Yeah, like, no thank you. You know, I'll play with some, even though I don't get to play a lot of standard right now, I'd still rather take some standard now. Then go play against Rally, Jeskai Black, some sort of, I mean, anyone who casts a Siege Rhino. you know, anything like that.
Chris does not like Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, because it
I'll
was...
I'll send you a Siege Rhino in my Christmas gift to you.
It was cast way too much for its time. Like, oh, this card again, yes.
But let's get out of the Frontier. Vintage. I decided to do a little look up on some vintage. You know, last we checked, Jeskai Mentor was about 20%, and now it's a whole 30%. Like, Monastery Mentor is going to get a restriction. There's no way they're going to let this continue doing what it does. Alex, Chris, got any opinions on this one?
I mean, I don't own white gloves, so I don't play vintage.
I can get you gloves if that's what's holding you back.
I mean, that's not the only thing holding me back, but it's also, you know, power and, you know, expensive cards.
You don't have to play power. You play null rods. Problem solved.
Yeah, but I like to play real decks, so.
That null rod deck I got, man, that thing is real. It wins occasionally. Occasionally.
So, I mean, you probably stay more in tune with this, Jerry. Is Mentor the problem, or is it the other things around Mentor that are the problem?
So,
ever since Mentor was printed, it's been pretty dominant.
Yep, it's been over-dominant. I mean, the cards that are around it anyways are already overpowered. That's why they're all restricted to one. And Mentor, having that as a four of, which just enables even further all these power cards, all these one-mana cantrips that you have. The gushes,
not even one mana. You get a lot of zero cost and all the Moxen and gushes and like Mentor and Time Walk is just busted. Like,
yeah.
Do you get Force Spike?
Yep, Force Spike is now it's a playset of Fluster Storms. Like it used to be Force Spike, but you were close. But yeah, Force Spike would trigger off of it. There's no reason to not play a full playset of Mentor, especially in your Jeskai deck or your Storm deck, which has evolved in the paradoxical outcome. Because you can play four of those, which perfect. Is sweet. But
it's just a different Yawgmoth wheel.
Yep. The only deck that's competing with these that's not Monastery Mentor is your Shops lists, and you have your two variants. Which
just had its best card get restricted. So
yeah, like if funny enough, if that card were to get unrestricted, it actually checks these decks hard. So that'd be nice, you know. Well, let's bring it off the restricted list.
That's not gonna happen.
No, I know they'll never do that. But that's all I really had on the vintage talk.
Gotcha. We had two new spoilers this week, so we'll start with Consulate Crackdown.
Boo!
You got that one up, Jerry, to read off?
Yes, I do. Consulate Crackdown is 5 mana, 3 white-white for an enchantment. When Consulate Crackdown enters the battlefield, exile all artifacts your opponents control until Consulate Crackdown leaves the battlefield.
I think the best thing this card has going for it is its name.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, for Commander, this seems sweet. I mean, if you have a Commander player in your store like myself who plays like artifact.commander deck, this card just hoses me. So, I mean, that's pretty much where it's going to go. Commander players are going to want this in some degree.
I think the best thing is its type, which would be enchantment. So, naturally, I like it. But that's about where it ends, is at enchantment.
Yeah.
So, we agree in consensus, Commander card, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we got a new Oath.
Surprise.
Oh. Read it off, Jerry.
All right. Oath of a Johnny is green and white. 2 mana for a green and a white source. Legendary enchantment. When Oath of a Johnny enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Planeswalker spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. All right. Who's first?
I'll let you guys start. Because we have a differentiating opinion.
All right.
So,
Chris, go ahead.
So I like it. I initially went to other formats, and I can see like where people are trying to play with the Tron Planeswalker decks. You know, this just helps them be more efficient, and if they have something out there to clog up the battlefield, it makes it a little bit bigger. Could be relevant, but I mean, Tron's already trying to break mana, so I mean you can Tron land play the Nissa Oath on one, and then you can play this, and possibly depending on what walker list you have on three, you're already curved way ahead into something else you want. I mean, we're looking at possibly casting two efficient walkers. I think it has potential. Maybe if the blue-white lists go Bant just for this card, just to make their creatures a little bit better in that aggro sense, because it helps pump them up. I think it has potential. It's just who's going to break it.
Okay.
But the thing that's weird to me is it's a legendary enchantment, but it's only, but it's not a mythic. That was the thing that kind of boggles my mind.
Yeah, that was the whole cycle. They were all rares.
Yeah. But have we seen anything come out that says legendary lately that wasn't a mythic?
Yeah.
We have?
There's been some legendary creatures that are.
Oh, yeah. Pia Kira Nalar. Pia Nalar. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
All right, what you got, Jerry? What's your opinion on this?
So for me, this card I think is going to have some impact in Standard. Two places. One, this could be the card that brings back green-white tokens. It lost a lot upon rotation, particularly Secure the Wastes, which is a sad miss. But if you play Oath of Ajani turn two, it gives you a turn three Gideon. That's strong. I don't think anyone's going to argue that. And the card is good at any stage of the game, practically. If you cast it early, it's going to make your Planeswalkers cheap. So fast Gideon, fast Nissa, fast Ajani if you're playing him. Why you are, please talk to me and I'll send you to my counselor. But and then later in the game, with all the tokens that you produced with your Nissa and your Gideon, it just, you know, it punches up the entire team, makes you break through. And Chris alluded to this for Bantless and Modern, but for the blue-white flash list in Standard, you could splash green, and this helps break mirrors. Because, you know, looking at 2-3s staring at each other all day kind of sucks. But when you're 2-3s or 3-4s, that's good magic right there. That's my opinion on the card.
All right. I am not hyped for this card. I think it's medium at best. Actually, I think it's really mediocre. And here's why. So in the same colors as, you know, green or white, you have several other effects that make, you know, put counters on everything. Nissa minus, and Nissa is strictly better as a planeswalker. Also, Thalia's Lieutenant, which is less mana intensive, and it's not seeing play either. Like, neither of those cards are seeing play right now. So I don't think the plus one counter on all your creatures is good enough. Also, I don't think the planeswalkers cost one less is good enough to see play. Because at most, in like green-white tokens, which is one of the most planeswalker-heavy decks of, you know, Standard or want this, at most they're running about 8 planeswalkers. So I just don't have room in my deck for a card that might reduce the cost of 8 cards in my deck that I might not even draw. And one of which is a 3-drop, so I don't even care about investing mana into it. And also, I don't like doing nothing on turn 2. If this is my play on turn 2, that feels real bad.
Even if you have the turn 3 Gideon?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a risk versus reward.
Because your opponent is going to do something more progressive on turn 2. Like, they're actually going to play a real 2-drop. Like, yes, this ramps you into Gideon, but they're going to play something like, oh, I don't know, Sylvan Advocate or, you know, an actual card. So then, yeah, you have your turn 3 Gideon, you make a 2-2, and then your opponent is at 3 mana, which is Ruinous Path mana or, you know, any kill spell to kill the creature, and they start attacking the Gideon. So, like, it doesn't even get you that far ahead because it doesn't give you any board presence until the Gideon.
Okay. I mean, but that's assuming that they curve out. Not everyone curves out in Standard, which is, if you can't curve out, you're already falling behind. A turn 3 Gideon when you're ahead of curve, it is a risk versus reward thing because, like you said, all the +1/+1 effects are not being used. You are correct in that. But with that being said, being able to get that nice curve, and it's a powerful curve, man, I don't know. Like,
it's a powerful curve, but once again, Gideon's only a 4-of. Like, what happens if you have this on turn 2 and you don't have the Gideon?
Nature of the deck, man. Risk versus reward. That's how I see it. I would take the risk. I mean, if it creates a deck into the format, I wouldn't be surprised, is what I'm on. I'm on, this is from my look at this, is medium to great. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Don't think it's medium.
Yeah.
Medium at best.
Like,
no. The only reason I like this one better, too, though, is it's +1/+1 isn't conditional. It's just on each creature I control, where Thalia's Lieutenant is only on humans, which I think is the big restriction right now from playing Thalia's Lieutenant.
Okay. Now, see,
sure.
Where I'm on with this like with the green white tokens list, say it does come back, I'm specking Oath of Ajani alongside Heart of Kirin, because of Heart of Kirin's alternate cost of crewing it requires a removal of a loyalty counter from a planeswalker. That's powerful. That's some powerful stuff. A turn two, like, assuming you just don't have the oath, a turn two Heart of Kirin into a turn three Nissa plus the Nissa for a token, able to crew the Heart of Kirin for an attack or a block, that is super strong. And I think that's a deck that might, that has a real chance.
And I agree. However, like, even in that example, I'd rather have Heart of Kirin on two. Like, yeah, you already gave me jam for two drops. I don't want the Oath of Ajani.
But, I mean, this is where the Oath of the Ajani gets good. On your turn four play, if you have, like, one or two of them, like, this is where Oath of the Ajani is good late. Like, you play an Oath, pump the team, play another Oath, pump the team, you're way ahead. Like,
I don't know. Like, yeah, that seems fine, but, like, it's just basically doing what Gideon and Nissa already do in the form of a Gideon emblem and the Nissa minus,
yes,
but not doing it as well.
Not doing it
as well. So, like, well, in my opinion, I would just rather have better cards.
So, all right. So you would play zero copies of this, correct, Alex?
Correct.
Okay. Chris, how many would you play in a deck? If you
probably,
what's that?
Probably two or three.
That's what I was on, too. I was on three, specifically. I don't know if I want four of this quite yet because it is just pretty bad in multiples if you have no way of enabling it.
Also, the thing about how bad this is after you get wrathed.
Oh, it's awful. It's freaking terrible.
Like, actually, in general, I think this is just a bad top deck. Like, yeah, there's going to be times where you top deck it and it does break, you know, whatever board stall you had going on, but I've always considered, like, if you hit a board stall as a player, one of the players messed up. One of the players could have broken this board stall. They just chose a different line and messed it up. So, like, I just try to avoid board stalls.
All right.
Well, that's my opinion. I don't think it's good. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about inbred metas. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to talk about some inbred metas. And this was brought up by me. I suggested it to Jerry and Chris here earlier because of an incident that happened to me at a local tournament. I went to an FNM to play some Modern. I was looking to play a deck I hadn't really played before because me and Jerry have been talking about going to Team Unified Modern in San Antonio. So I was going to try out some Burn. So I borrowed Burn from a friend who had the full 75 ready to go. He actually just had it built as an extra deck to loan out. And he had some very odd choices in it. Some numbers were off. The sideboard was way out of whack, and I didn't like it at all, but I just didn't have cards to change it. And I was talking to him about it. I'm like, why is your deck, you know, built this way? Why are you running this 75? And he said, oh, it's to beat Jund. And yes, there are quite a few Jund players, or just Greenback X players in general in my area compared to the normal. And even at that FNM, there was 12 players and three of them were on Jund, but I didn't play any of them. And having the deck built this way actually hurt me throughout the night, mm-hmm. Which kind of got me on this of, you know, what is inbred? How does it come about? You know, why is it potentially bad and things like that? In your opinion, Jerry, what do you think? What is inbreeding?
Inbred metas, to me, is when you have a game store. We'll use yours as an example. A game store in the middle of, you know, it's hard to get around from place to place. Central Illinois, we'll say that. You have your one game store there, and you have the same 20 guys play. We'll say that. You know, no, nothing in particular, you know, but we're all playing the same decks. And throw this out there, let's say five knuckleheads are on Affinity. All of a sudden, everyone in the room notices the five Affinity players, and after time goes on, we build in more sideboard hate for Affinity than we normally would. We would play like Shatterstorm's mainboard. Funny stuff like that.
More upping number of Culligan's commands and Jund and things, yeah.
Things like that. Numbers you wouldn't normally see from when you would go to an overall general tournament.
Do you pretty much agree with that, Chris? Got anything to add?
Yeah, I think this is where you also see more pet cards. Like, yeah, maybe you have that one or a two up, but this is where you'll see also a sideboard of like hey, why do you have these three sideboard cards? Oh, because it's good against this. Okay, well, that doesn't help you against the range of decks you're going to play at all. Yeah, but I can beat this one deck. Like, you're just so tuned to beat this one deck. But those X cards don't help you beat anything else in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And then kind of going with this, kind of like the why and how of why does this happen is, well, a local game store and you're having tournaments like FNMs or something like that. Like, you want to win FNM, and you know if a certain quantity of deck is going to be there, especially in modern, where decks are, $1,000 or whatever, and nobody's going to swap decks week to week. They're pretty much going to stay the same. You want to win. So you can kind of hedge, like, oh, I'm probably going to play this guy when we're both 3-0. So I want to have these cards against him and things like that. Do you guys kind of agree with that? That's kind of how it comes to be.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm not going to, I go to an FNM and I lose to, we'll use old standard, I lose to Rally 3 times in a row, you better believe I'm going to have Grave Hate. In my deck, at least in my 75, probably possibly in the main board if I lost to it 3 times.
Right. And then now I kind of get into the larger picture here of why this potentially is a problem of how does this mess you up for a larger tournament? I know me personally, I don't like I avoid inbreeding my sideboards and stuff. I like to have a sideboard that I would run at a Grand Prix is what I'm going to run at FNM every week, whether it's right or wrong. But how does taking an inbred, slight numbers off in your main deck or a different sideboard to a Grand Prix, how does that affect your overall tournament result?
That's going to hurt your result, man. You're not prepared to fight anything else. You're prepared to fight 2 decks in a format with like 20 decks, if we're talking Modern and Legacy, which is where inbreeding happens.
Like the last tournament I played at when I went with Bobby, the guy I played with for games 2 and 3 had 4 cards or 4 to 5 cards dedicated solely to Boggles.
What? So that's a problem.
Like, what are the odds that I'm... And we asked him, like, why do you run so many of these cards? And he said it's just because there's a buddy at my store who plays Boggles, and so this is how I beat him.
Man, it was like that time at that Super IQ you top-8ed, man. You run into the guy, you're playing Boggles, and the guy's playing Blue Moon, and you beat him game 1 on a mulligan 4 on top of that, which was freaking sweet. But game 2, he sides in 11 cards. I'm like, what? 11 cards for Boggles?
Yeah, it was... I think if you're the player and you happen to catch that right matchup, like, yeah, you feel great. But if you're the person who's had this deck tuned to, like, annihilate you, you're like, well, this seems awesome. Because I'm on, like, Alex's plan. I try and pick a 15 that are what 15 cards can I pick that are going to have the greatest impact on all other decks or... Like, if I inbreed, it's a little bit. So, like, a bad matchup for me is Jund. So I might put an extra card or 2 that are good against Jund, but still have utility against other decks. I can't do that. Hey, this just helps me beat Jund. No, I need something that helps me beat Jund, but is still good against 2 or 3 other decks.
See, that's the correct way to do it, Chris.
You've done it right. Good job, Chris.
Yeah.
Yay.
And you kind of talked about there. This is another bullet here I kind of want to talk about is how frustrating is when you hit like a Grand Prix or an Open or something and you find that guy with those just like all the sideboard cards for this matchup. Like it can just destroy your tournament, especially like a Grand Prix on competitive level. X2 is top 8. Like you take more losses than that, like depending on the number of players, sometimes X3 and things like that, but for the most part you just want to have 2 losses. If one of the early rounds, say round 4 or 5, you hit somebody with just an inbred sideboard and just crushes you, like it destroys your chances.
Yeah, sometimes you just run into that guy with 3 mainboard slaughter games and you just look at yourself and go, what is even happening right now? I mean, congratulations, you got me, buddy, but he did not top 8. he hurt himself in the process because he wasn't beating anybody else. For those who might be guessing, yeah, I was playing ad nauseum. No surprise there. Like, you got me. Like, he did it with a freaking ritual on turn three.
Yeah, that seems bad.
Yeah, like things you're not supposed to do, and that's one of them. Like, you're gonna get the matchup that you're hating out, but you ain't gonna get the rest of the tournament.
Right, and especially, like, it's a little bit easier in Standard because Standard's a more known format. Like, especially right now, where it's like a rock, paper, scissors format. You can know if you're playing scissors and you need to beat rock, well, I can change my sideboard to do that and maybe hurt my paper matchup or whatever, but it'll be okay in the long run. Mm-hmm. But, like, in something like Modern, where you need a very diverse sideboard, and typically people argue there's not enough sideboard slots for all of Modern, you can't be dedicating four slots to one deck.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think 15. I disagree. 15 cards is plenty sideboard spot. You know.
I agree too, but that's what the usual argument there is.
Terrible argument is terrible. Learn how to play Magic.
Sure, Jerry. We're all. Anyway, and also with this, I kind of want to talk about playtesting and stuff too, or just results in general. Do you guys think inbreeding skews playtesting results or just tournament results in general for players?
Absolutely. It'll skew you because you're playing against decks that are targeted to hate you. You need to be playing against stock lists, not these inbred lists that are built to fight you. That doesn't help you. I mean, if you're able to beat these decks that are skewed to beat you, well, now there's a problem with the skewed deck in itself, that the cards are just bad, and it's messing with what your actual results could be. You know, like Chris said, playtesting against Jund, he has a difficult game one, but it's not impossible. And his games two and three get slightly better depending on if he has his ley line or not, which is how he beats that matchup. But there's no way that he should be running a main board, devouring flesh to make your opponent sack a creature. Like, that's skewed. That makes it seem way worse, and it doesn't help you or your friend in the long run.
Yeah, it just irritates your friend who's like, oh great, this okay matchup just went to horrible real quick. I don't know.
I think it actually, like, lets people kind of mislead themselves on matchups. Like, somebody could be thinking, oh, I have a great matchup against this deck. Well, it turns out, yeah, you have a great matchup because they've inbred to beat other decks. Like, there are certain times where, like, a mid-range deck gets more controlling. You know, it could be Junk, for example, but they're on the more controlling side. Like, they're main decking Elspeth or something because they want to beat other green-black X decks, and you're better against them because of it, but that's not actual. Yeah, like an actual deck that you're going to play big tournament.
That's a cool thing to do. I mean, if you can beat the decks, then sure, but that's what the sideboard's for, not mainboarding that shenanigans. And even then, you don't sideboard that many copies. Like, there should be no rhyme or reason why you're running three Elspeths in your junk deck to beat the mid-range decks.
Right. But like I was kind of saying, you went a little off track there, but that's fine.
My fault. I picked up what you're putting down.
Yeah, as far as, like, testing goes, like, it's not realistic because you think you could be deceiving yourself that you think this matchup's good. So then it gets to the opposite of inbreeding, like, oh, this matchup's good. I actually don't need this card in the sideboard anymore. Then you go to a tournament and it turns out that matchup's just atrocious and you'd be playing a banned version of it. And you play a good version of it and a good player and he just destroys you.
Yeah.
Yep. That'll do it.
I mean, it's hard when you're playtesting to fully determine how your matchup is, because usually it's just, hey, you know, we sleeve this up, let's play it. And that may not even be in that player's color wheel of what he normally plays, but you've been, you know, you've put these one or two or, 11 cards in your deck that just make you awesome at this matchup. And then maybe in the end, I just don't know how to play that deck correctly. You know, so now you've wasted all these other slots to essentially inbreed your sideboard or even parts of your main board to beat this one horrible matchup. And you think you got it, and it turns out the way you've you've manipulated your deck. You're worse off than you were to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's actually like the worst case kind of like end result of inbreeding. Like everyone at the store is playing just a worse version because they've all, because like then there's the next level of inbreeding of, oh, okay, this guy's playing this card to beat me, so now I play this card to beat him. A card that shouldn't even be in the deck in the first place, but it beats, you know, whatever his answer to your deck is. So it just, it's a spiral.
Yeah.
I know it's actually one of the things, like, I like traveling for Magic events. I like going to new stores and you know, seeing, you know, new metas and things like that. But it's always scary for me going into an unknown meta, like the Chicago stores especially, because there's so many of them. And if it's one I haven't been to before, but I go up there for a PTQ or something, just walking in, I don't know what I'm going to play. And they could have an inbred meta. And if I'm going in there with the wrong deck, not knowing it, like, if they've hated out the aggro deck of the format, and like standard, for example, I'm playing red black aggro, or you know, which is very similar to like vehicles. So if there are a bunch of green black X players that have hated out all the aggro decks, if I walk in there with aggro not knowing it, I'm walking into a slaughter.
Yep, you're walking into a bad day.
Yeah. So how do you guys feel about kind of going into an unknown meta?
Well, like you said, it's scary, but format is, for me, it's format dependent. It's also deck choice, you know? If you're going into an unknown meta, I highly suggest any people that are new to Modern, Legacy, or even Pauper, you know, play something that is non-interactive. I know, Wizards keep saying, you need to play interactive Magic, this, that, and the other thing. But a non-interactive deck that doesn't care about what they're doing, man, that'll be a start. Like, it'll at least give you an idea as to what's going on in that room.
What do you think, Chris? How do you feel about unknown meta and the fear of inbreeding in it?
Yeah, so it always worries me because, I mean, I pretty much play the same decks, not in all formats, to that format. And I can tell walking in when I play and it's like, why is that card, you know, even in your deck? And it frustrates me. Because it's like, when I look at my sideboard, I try and fight an array to the best that I can. You know, make my bad matchups better. I might lose a couple points on a good matchup, but if it makes my bad matchups better to where I can steal games here and there, I think that's winning. And so whenever you walk into an unknown meta, you're like, so I'm balanced, and is my balanced correct? And so it's just frustrating when it's like, well, if I'd have just dedicated, you know, five cards to this, I could have cleared the room. That's my frustrations with an unknown meta. Is you walk in, you find out the room's been hated to one thing, and you have five cards in your sideboard that do nothing against anything in the room, and you're like, well, so much to trying to play Magic.
Yeah, I think one of my stories, I can't remember if I told it on the cast or not, about the Invitational me and Jerry went to in New Jersey, where I took Norrod out of the sideboard of Rogue Delver because I wanted Sulfur Elemental to beat up Monastery Mentor decks, because I'm like, I don't think I need this Norrod, not many people are running Mud right now. And the first two rounds I played Mud. Like,
and Norrod would have been nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Because that was my only loss in Legacy for that first day. I went 3-1, and it was to one of the Mud decks where, like, if I had it, that I might have been 4-0 out of Legacy, and then it would have felt great. But actually, it's funny because I actually feel, I don't know if this is true for you guys, I feel more confident going into a Grand Prix than I do a local PBTQ that I don't know the meta. Like, going into a Grand Prix, I feel like I can usually generalize the meta. Like, yeah, this deck is a certain percentage of the meta. There's a chance I'm going to play it 2 to 3 times in day one. You know, do I have enough sideboard for this? And is my sideboard, you know, arranged to where I'm good against a lot of things? But how we talked about going into an unknown meta, it could just be so inbred. My sideboard doesn't matter. Yep. So I don't know if you guys kind of understand what I'm saying or feel that same way.
I feel the same way. I really do. When it comes to going to a Grand Prix, because everyone's playing based on what the given percentage of the meta is that actually represents itself on different websites. Like, Infect really is the most played modern deck that consistently wins. I know that in the Grand Prix sense, but I know in my local store that nobody plays Infect. So I know what I'm walking into when it comes to the big room.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think, Chris?
So I like them more, the Grand Prix, because it's kind of like what you were saying. I'm going to fill my sideboard with stuff to combat multiple decks. So, you know, if you figure numbers, if you got 9 rounds on day one, you know, I might play something 3 times, maybe. And that even really seems high to me, playing the same thing 3 times. But at least you know you came prepared to fight multiple things. Whereas in an inbred meta, I mean, you might only have to fight 1 or 2 things. And so that's kind of why I like the bigger scenes, like you were talking of the Grand Prix or something like that. Because it feels like the ammo you brought, you know, isn't going to go to waste.
Yeah, exactly. No, I like that. Because if you, and this is true of you having your own inbred sideboard and taking it to a Grand Prix of, yeah, you're going to crush, you know, your affinity matchup. You're going to crush, you know, in standard, the aggro matchup or whatever. But if you're not actually paying attention to what the percentage is, you might not play that all day. And then you're just wasting your time.
You might not play it at all. And then you get really punished when you have 5 cards in your board you never touch the whole day.
Right. So kind of going with this, how do we combat inbreeding? Is there a way to stop it? Do we just ignore it? What do you do, Jerry?
You have to acknowledge it. It exists. You also have to know how to play into it and how to play out of it. Like how we alluded to, Grand Prix's bigger events don't have inbreeding issues, but, you know, inbred metas at local stores are a thing. You know, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world to know how to inbreed, but you need to learn and teach yourself how to outbreed, if you will. Like, I got no real good word for it. But you need to You need to be able to understand that what your meta is at your local store isn't necessarily going to be the meta at a Grand Prix, and you need to be able to pick up on the correct board, the sideboard state and main board you need configured correctly for an overall general meta game. What is generally the consensus of what you should be running into statistically, not what you run into in your game store?
How do you feel about that, Chris?
Well, I think the biggest way to combat it is, and you guys do this, you become a sniper, is how I'd like to compare it. Like, oh, this is the game you all want to play? All right. Well, in response, I will inbreed. How Jerry says are outbreed, I will outbreed to the farthest, you know, stents of the earth, and I'll make this deck that just destroys the inbreeding. And then the next week, they're going to come with some stuff, you know, you get to see what they're doing to try and combat that. And then the next week, you just move to the left of that, and then eventually, it seems like they'll get the idea of like, hey, we need to be able to fight more than one thing. But like you and Jerry are pretty good at it. Like you kind of got, you know what they're doing at the stores you go to. So sometimes you guys will sleeve stuff up that's a little bit out of the norm for y'all to be like, pew, 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 pew. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
Like you want to know how bad the inbreeding is at my store, Chris, for modern. Huh. We have 3 guys dedicated to Affinity and 3 guys dedicated to Coco. I went there on a Friday Night Magic 2 Fridays ago with blue-red Scred Blue Moon, where I played a 1 of mainboard Graph Digger's Cage, 3 mainboard Anger of the Gods, and 1 mainboard Shatterstorm.
And probably just 1.
Oh, I 3-0'd. It wasn't even close. It's hilarious to me how I was able to do that. Now that
you outbred so much, you came full circle and went inbred. It was awesome.
I went inbred and out of the bread and into the oven.
Yeah. And also with this, I kind of want to acknowledge knowing when a deck is inbred. Like when you're looking at deck results and you see an IQ top 8 list, or versus, you know, an open list or a Grand Prix list. Or I would honestly argue that the Pro Tour is a little bit inbred, because for the most part, they know what each other's playing, or they've decided what the best deck is, and then they can hate for it. So you have to understand when you're looking at a list, like, why are these cards in the sideboard? Sometimes it's not always right to just straight neck deck, because you're just net decking inbreeding, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say on that, Jerry?
No, you've nailed it on the head. You've put the head of the hammer on the nail, if I can speak.
You cannot.
No, I can't. But no, you're right. The Pro Tour is a little bit inbred, and you need to be careful and be able to recognize it. You need to be able to recognize an inbred deck. For example, the blue Scred Moon deck I played, that is an inbred deck. It could not be any more inbred than that.
Right.
But
yeah, another example of that is standard. This last FNM, there was a PPTQ at my store on Saturday, but I'm already qualified, so I wasn't playing. There's a guy that came to FNM. He's like, I don't play much standard. I'm looking to get back into it. Can you like help with suggestions? Because he was playing Marty Vehicles, and I was playing red black. We played some games, and I was just crushing him because I knew the matchup, and like we played sideboard games, and I was just crushing him worse with all the galvanic bombardments and stuff. He's like, well, can you help me with my sideboarding? And he was running the Frank Karsten version, which, as Marty Vehicles, sideboards four Spirebluff canals and then a bunch of Ceremonious Rejections to beat Aetherworks Marvel. I'm like, this is not necessary at all. You don't need to sideboard four lands for a matchup, no matter if it's a third of the meta or not.
That is the most inbred deck I have ever seen. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I personally
but this
like
is what
it.
A pro wrote that he was doing, because at the Pro Tour, there was a lot of Aetherworks.
It's not even
you know?
A bad matchup for him. Like, what is this?
I, that's what I was thinking, but...
Like, you're playing Vehicles, man. Your worst matchup's that green-black Delirium list. Get your life together.
Yeah. So that was definitely a time where, like, you got to recognize some inbreeding, you know? You got to recognize that maybe this isn't right. This seems really weird. Sideboarding four lands seems really weird.
Now, you want to know crazy sideboards that aren't inbred? And it took me a few years to get this, too. But you ever see sideboards where, like, it's 15 cards and it's all one-ofs?
Yeah.
That's typically a telltale sign that's not an inbred sideboard. That sideboard is used as kind of a catch-all to the whole format. That is... I like those sideboards. It takes a minute, because you got to go through each individual card. Like, why is he running this? Why is he running this? Why is he running this? But if you're asking yourself those questions, that means that deck is not inbred.
Right. That's how Suicide Zoo is for me in my... I think I have two 2-ofs, and the rest is all 1-ofs. But all the 1-ofs work in different matchups. Like, you know, I bring in typically 4 to 5 cards in every matchup, but it's all 1-ofs. You know, pulling double duty cards.
Yeah. Now, you could do what I did. Now, you could completely disregard all inbreeding and play copies of Madcap Experiment and hit Platinum Angels and not care.
It's true.
Which is really sweet, by the way.
Yep. That'll win you the game.
I just thought I'd point that out.
Gotcha. Kind of closing this one out here. Overall, do we think inbreeding is bad?
Yes.
Like, is there upsides to inbreeding? What do you got, Jerry?
It's a 50-50. Is it good? Yes. Is it bad? Yes. It helps you learn. Like, I couldn't be any more like, I love going into a new store that I know I'm going to be going to regularly with their little inbred meta. It helps me decide what I'm going to do to help beat them. I might lose week 1 and week 2, but by weeks 3 and 4, I'll have constructed a deck that can hammer this meta out where I can consistently 3-0 every single Friday.
Yeah, I would say that's a little bit of an upside. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I just think it's bad because you're playing inbred versions of decks, so you're playing mostly of the deck, but you're not seeing that deck perform fully how it's supposed to perform. Which, when you start trying to go to the competitive levels and you have people playing the decks how they're meant to be played, it probably comes off as a shocker to you, like, oh, that's why that card's played instead of this stupid card this guy's playing over here. Turns out that really just hoses me. So that's why I'm a fan. I do agree with it does have good in the fact that you probably get repetition down of playing. Because usually, in my opinion, when you're going to see an inbred meta, it's people settle into their decks and they just play the same one over and over and over to get reps in. So at least you'll get that familiarity with mostly the same deck, or you know, most of the 75 that it's supposed to have.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think it's more bad than good. Like, I understand where it's good, and what Jerry says, you know, you can just go in and spike a small event and just, you know, take your winnings and walk away. There's nothing new about it.
Yep.
But for the most part, I think it's bad because, and it goes with what you're talking about there, Chris, with the repetitions. Like, yes, repetitions are good. And that's the majority of the reason I even play FNM or something like that is to actually just get repetition in paper of a deck that I'm going to play in a couple weeks at like a Grand Prix or an Open or a bigger tournament. I just go to get some reps in. So I want the deck that I'm going to play at that event. Like, I actually want the sideboard I'm going to run there. I want the 75. I mean, yeah, I could make a change or two because of reps. You know, I might realize this card is not as good as I thought it was just in general and things like that. But I want the repetition of the deck that I'm actually going to play, if that makes sense.
Makes 100% sense. I agree with you. So
all right.
So to finalize the key points, it's good as a learning curve. It's bad in the sense that it is not helping you get repetition with the deck you should be playing, and it's bad in the sense that you're not getting the repetition against the decks you should be playing.
Yep, I'll agree with that.
Cool. Chris, you agree with that?
All right.
I agree.
Woot.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Check out our website, thesnapcast.com, if you're not listening to this there. Also, Facebook, we're on that too. And YouTube, just search for us. We don't have actually like YouTube/thesnapcast yet. We don't have enough followers, but like and follow on there, and maybe we'll get to that point. So until then, I'll see you next week.